welcome to Higher Ed, KUT's podcast focusing on issues of higher education, lifelong learning, and exercising the brain. I'm Jennifer Staton with KUT 90.5, Austin's NPR station, talking as always with Dr. Ed Berger, president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. Hello, Ed.
Hello, Jennifer, and it's always great to have you on my campus here in Georgetown.
The last time you were at our studios and we were taping podcast episodes, you said, I want to do an episode about something I've really noticed as kind of a phenomenon these days. And what you said to me is, I've noticed that somehow it's become cool to be mad, and that if you're not mad, you know, something's wrong. And that really intrigued me. I want to know what you meant by that and how that relates to our discussions about learning and education. But first of all, what did you mean by that?
I do remember this, and I don't remember the context anymore, but I do remember this thought. I think it pertains to a lot of people in our society today, but especially young people.
And you're around young people.
Turns out.
Day in and day out as president of Southwestern University.
That's right. And so that's also just kind of in higher ed in general, I think this is a global thing. It's not something that's just happening on my campus, although I think it is on my campus as well, which is that because we are so connected through social media with other people's emotional states that are shared, and I'm thinking about Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat and Twitter and so forth, all these things. And we have instant access, and given what people normally put out, and if you look, I'm only on Twitter. That's the only thing I'm on, right? On Twitter, it seems to be that people really love to put out when they're mad or when they're unhappy or when they're cranky or when they... Now, I'm not putting down some of the issues that they will raise, which will be, you know, social injustices around the world. Sometimes they're silly things like I can't get my favorite toothpaste or something like that. But they're also real issues, political issues, right? You know, this country is always involved in chaotic episodes regarding, you know, kind of how the government works and you know, who we elect at various levels. All of those issues are extremely important and impactful, so I'm not taking away from that. However, I think that people today, more than ever, are mirroring the emotional reactions to issues large and small. And instead of intellectually engaging and saying, well, I want to debate you now. If you're going to say that, which I think is wacky, I won't say that out loud, but I think it's wacky, let's debate it. I want to hear your thinking on it. I want to hear your argument, and I want to try to rebut it. Instead, what we say is, that's wacky. And you're crazy, and I hate you because you have that thought. And if I say something that you find different from your point of view, you'll be offended by that. You'll be outraged by it, and how dare he? And I won't talk to him. And I think that kind of instant escalation to anger is something that is fairly new and driven by social media. And I will tell you, as an old person, that I don't like it. I think
he's
it's not that old. But well, bless you. But I have a problem with that. And we talked about, I think last week, about the idea of being grateful and gratitude and joy. In some sense, this bookends that. This is kind of where we're seeing part of the lack of space for that. It's because everyone just gets riled up. Instead of saying, well, first of all, is it true or not? What's the evidence? What's the thinking about it? And even if I disagree, is there a way that I can understand how someone could have a different point of view or not? And, you know, and sometimes people say things that are really ugly and hateful and hurtful, and the answer is no. There's no way to really see that as a thoughtful, thinking individual. But sometimes the issues are a little bit more subtle. And I don't think we have the space for that thinking. We immediately go to the emotional response, and that leads everything.
Well, and it seems like social media probably is not the space for that subtle, nuanced conversation about it. But I also wonder, I mean, you are around young people a lot, and they are heavy users of social media. Don't you think there's an element to that, though, that's just about provocation and attention and maybe starting the conversation, but not necessarily... But it sounds like what you're saying, though, is that it needs to continue at a deeper level somewhere else besides Twitter or wherever it's happening, Facebook.
That's exactly right, Jennifer. It can't end with a tweet, which is 140 characters. It can't end that way. You can't do anything in 140 characters of meaning. Now, it's interesting that what you just said, because I will tell you that when I first started here at Southwestern, which was, you know, going on 4 years now, 4 years ago, I follow students that basically either directly invite me or indirectly invite me by mentioning me in tweets or saying things to me, and then I will follow them. Otherwise, I will leave you alone because, you know, you have to have your own space. And sometimes I think some of my students will forget that I'm following them, and I read these tweets and sometimes forget about language, which I can easily, you know, ignore. But some of the content, it's like, whew, but I just forget that I've read them. I read them and I move on, and, you know, because of what you're saying. They're young and they're being, they're being provocative and whatever. They're venting. But early on, I would read some very disconcerting tweets from students occasionally that really concerned me, almost being, you know, hopeless. And then I would reach out to them. And I would send them a note and say, is everything okay? And is there anything I can do to help? And always they'd write back and say, oh, no, I'm just having a bad day. But they would be kind of overly dramatic. And as an old guy reading this thing, I'm like, holy moly, is this person really struggling in a very profound way? But it turns out that's a way of venting. So I've learned that. And now, unless it's really something over the top, I just will let them go, at least unless I see it's a recurring theme. But how helpful is that to the receiver of the message? It's one thing to kind of spew out that venom to make you feel better. But on the other hand, there's someone that might read it. And how are you affecting their day or their life or their whatever? I don't think we are sensitive to that.
Well, and I think it may be an evolving process. And if I think about it sort of in the context of lifelong learning and how we're always thinking and engaged with what's going on, I wonder if those kinds of messages over and over. I mean, I guess it's a little bit of the maybe boy who cried wolf, or I wonder if the recipients then learn to not necessarily take all of those provocative messages at face value, but go, oh, maybe that person's having a bad day. So that when a really serious message does come up or there is trying to be serious discussion about a topic, then we don't engage because we've sort of learned over time to, you know, not take everything at 100% of what it looks like just from the language alone.
That's right. And all you're getting is the language and the words, you know, on a text or if it's like maybe a little video clip. But one of the great perks about being a member of a residential liberal arts institution like Southwestern University is that you can engage with human beings. One of the things that I have in my class, one of the rules I have in my class, I have a lot of rules. You want to take a class with the president of Southwestern, you got to follow a lot. In fact, I make you sign a contract. There's literally a contract you sign. Yeah, it's awful. I don't know why they take these classes with me, but they do, and I'm appreciative. But one of the rules is that when you're in the class, it's like a 2.5 hour class in the evening, we all go off the grid.
No phones, so no smartphones?
Not even on vibrate. They are turned off and you don't use your computer and you live the moment and when we take breaks, you engage with people live.
So they don't even get phones at break time?
Correct. And so the idea is that for at least a couple of hours a week, you are living in a community with human beings. Because when you, like I'm looking at you right now and you're nodding yes, so you're acknowledging that you're understanding what I'm saying. I can't get that from you when you read a tweet of mine. We follow each other and I won't get that and you won't get that from me. So we are losing the art of just engaging with people in the moment. And when I walk around my campus, and it's a beautiful campus, people are always looking down and they're somewhere else. They're living somewhere else and they're being stimulated and a lot of times being mad, which is what you brought up to start this conversation. Somewhere else where really they're fine where they are. Now, should they be concerned about something, some kind of big injustice going on? Absolutely. Should they think about effective ways of engaging and trying to help? Absolutely. But just being mad and cranky or angry or whatever, that is not going to help. And it's actually hurting the person. When I walk by someone who's looking down and not enjoying my beautiful campus, I will always say to them, oh, tell them I say hi. And they look up and they're startled because there's a human being there. First of all, they're startled that another person is right there. They never saw me coming. And then they're like, what? You know, and nice to tell them I say hi.
Do you ever stand there and let them bump into you?
No, but sometimes if I'm on a pirate bike, you know, we have these pirate bikes around campus. Sometimes I will almost have a near collision and the sidewalks are narrow. And if someone's walking right in the middle of a sidewalk and I can't, you know, veer off, it sometimes is a little bit close. Yes.
I'm going to say my experience is the only way to get through the puzzler that was introduced last week was to completely be in the moment with that puzzler and to not be distracted.
Do you think you got it?
I might have. I think I got partway there.
Let me remind everybody what the puzzler was. It was a little bit complicated. We have three individuals that are going to work as a team. Why don't we give them some kind of gender? Why don't you pick whatever gender you want so I can have to say them or his
or her?
Well,
I kept saying he. I just did he for all of them.
All right, fine. So on your recommendation, They're going to be three individuals, and they are competing as a team. And as long as one of them gets this right, they all win. Okay, so they're lined up in a straight line, and the person in the back can see the backs of the two people in front of them. The person in the middle can't see the person behind him, but can see the person in front of him. And the person in the very front of the line can't see anybody. Okay, they're shown through five hats. Three of them are black, and two of them are white. Otherwise, they're all identical. They're then blindfolded, and then someone puts a hat from this five on each one of these three. So everyone now has one of these hats. So three hats are being used. The other two hats are now hidden from sight, so you can't see those. And now the blindfolds are removed. And we're starting with the person in the very, very rear of the line, the one who can see the first two people. And then the question is, do you know for certain what the color of your hat?
That's your own hat that you're wearing.
Do you know for certain? And these are higher ed listeners. These are smart people. These are maybe Southwestern students, so they're brilliant people. And so they can think through this. And after thinking through this, the rearmost person says, no, I do not know for certain the color of my hat. Now, that's heard by the other two people, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, the middle person is asked the same question. Do you know with certain the color of your hat? And the person thinks a long time and thinks and thinks and really is bright and eventually says, no, I do not know for certain the color of my hat. Then we go to the person at the front of the line who has seen nobody but has heard everything. And we ask that person, do you know the color of your hat? And after thinking for a while, the person says, yes, I do know for certain the color of my hat. The question for you and for our listening audience is, what is that hat color?
Well, I think we can start at the back of the line.
Okay.
With a person who could see both hats. The fact that that person said, no, I can't determine, means that numbers two and one ahead of him in line have to have some combination of black and white hats.
Why?
Because there are only two white hats.
Right.
And if both of them were wearing white hats, then person three would know with certainty that his hat was black because there were three black hats. But
right.
He says, no, I don't know my color.
That's brilliant. So let's just pause right there. So that person in the back could not see two white hats because there were only two white hats, which would led him to conclude that he's wearing a black one. So therefore, we know that we do not have two white hats in that mix. And everybody else knows that because they can do the same analysis.
Right.
Remember, everyone hears everything. So white as hats.
That's out.
That's out.
As
very
an
good. So now we go to the second person, so the middle person in line. And that person said, I can't tell for certain either.
Uh-huh.
So now talk us through that.
All right. So person two in line says, I don't know either. Okay. Now I'm maybe losing the thread here. I think I've already forgotten. Number two heard person number one. So person number three. So person number two says, I can't tell either. Uh-oh. Now, all right, I've lost the thread.
Well, let's see what the possibilities are. We know we can't see a white-white combination.
Right.
So what are the possibilities? Let's list them all.
Well, so person... Well, it could be.
What are the hat colors we could see?
Black or white.
Well, no. There's two hats. There's
right.
Two, so we could see either black.
Oh, of what's left. Right.
Black.
Black or white-black.
White-black or black-white.
Black-white,
okay,
yes.
So there are three possibilities. Either they're both wearing black hats,
uh-huh.
Or the white hat's in front followed by a black hat, or
mm-hmm.
We have a black hat in front followed by a white hat.
Yes.
Now, what do we learn when the person in the middle says, I don't know for sure.
That means the person in the front has to be wearing, he doesn't know for sure.
The middle person.
Middle person doesn't know for sure. So the person in the front has to have a black hat.
Why?
Because person number three said, I don't know, which means middle person and front person were not wearing white.
Right.
And that means the front person can't be wearing white because person three already said no.
Well, if the front person was wearing a white hat, what would we know about the middle person?
That they were wearing a black hat.
We would know for certain that the middle person must be wearing a black hat because the back person told us it's not white.
Right.
So if the middle person sees white in front of him, then he knows that he must be a black hat person.
But he knows he doesn't know his own color.
Right, which means what color must he see?
Black.
Which means the first person knows for sure, and what color is that?
The first person knows for sure it'd have to be black.
Right. And so the answer is that first person knows that they're wearing a black hat, and you just explained it. Very complicated. People might have to listen to this a few times or draw a picture. But it can't be white-black, because then the second person would have known that person was wearing a black hat.
Right. And we know the first person knew it was not white-white. So, man, this is probably one of the more convoluted drawings that I've done to try to get
So now are you mad at me now?
I am mad.
It's not even social media and you're mad at me?
I am mad. No, I am not mad.
But at least it's an anger. If you were mad, at least it was an anger that was generated – directed at you. I mean, I was talking to you. It wasn't that you were angry about some other thing, right? I mean, you were being stimulated by me and you had a reaction to that versus just being upset because someone else is upset. Mm-hmm. That's different.
Well, I wonder if, just as we wrap up here, I wonder if there's a place then in education and learning for talking about anger, because it seems to me part of the scenario is if you're taking to social media and other places with anger, the implicit message is that I can't bring it in the classroom or I can't bring it in person.
Right. Or how do you live with anger, or how do you help yourself alleviate anger? And from last time we talked about mindfulness as a way of, and showing gratitude as a way of trying to alleviate that. Some people, I think, like the fact that they're angry, and that bothers me even more. That people should not like that state, even though they might find it necessary to get a point across or to fix some wrong, which I am very respectful of. But you can fix a wrong and still have a joyful life.
Well, Ed, thank you for helping us keep our brains sharp in a joyful way. Dr. Ed Berger is president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. You can find out more at southwestern.edu. And you can keep your brain busy by keeping up with the news and other episodes of Higher Ed at KUT.org. You can also find us on iTunes. I'm Jennifer Staten with KUT News.